I'm not sure about the purgatory of the womb for 9 months. That's probably the worst. But for an adult, the 12-hour flight is a little like that, so which we were allowed to experience repeatedly on this trip. You know, it was interesting, Davy, talking about the placebo effect and how important it is what we think and what we believe, because in fact, everything is consciousness. Part of Maya is to think that the physical world is the real world and the world of consciousness or the mind is somehow, I don't know, imaginary. But it's really exactly the opposite. That's what part of the night to the yogi and day to the worldly man is about, is that we think that's part of Maya, because Maya pushes outward. It makes us think that something that is outward is more real than something that's inward. But it's exactly the opposite. And coming back to the placebo effect, here it is in medication that we can take. And one of the things in this article that it said was that once you've taken some medicine, they can actually physiologically show that you can take that medicine and it will have an effect before it can go into the bloodstream. And so, like aspirin, Davy and I, our favorite medicine, all we had to do was swallow it, and already the, you know, whatever the little mental processes that allowed that. But without making light of it, it's consciousness that changes things. And that's one reason why it's very, very important in our relationship with God and meditation to think of God as friendly, to think of God as our playmate. That isn't just a kind of a nice sentiment, because when we think of God as distant, when we think of God as judgmental, when we think of God as uncaring, we produce the conditions, the placebo effect, that keeps us in Maya. So when we think of God as our playmate, as our friend, that's why we start our prayer, friend, beloved God, father, mother, to try to drive home that sense of familiarity in the divine, because the reality is that thinking of God as distant keeps God distant. Thinking of him as close keeps him close. Jaya made an interesting point in one of his talks. He said, as we know from the teachings from Master, that Master has taught that we make 25% of the effort. The Guru on our behalf makes 25% of the effort, matching ours. And God matches both with 50% of the effort. He said, basically what that means for us is that all we have to do is show up. Because God, through the divine and through the Guru on our behalf, is making the effort. And it's a little bit kind of light-humored way of saying it, but if we open ourselves to their blessing, their grace, the flow of energy on our behalf, the placebo effect, which there ought to be a better name, like the real medicine effect, comes into play. And they do, in fact, make the vast majority of the progress for us. I wanted to talk, sometimes we can get, I don't know, at least I can get into the sense that there's so much that we have to do. You know, we have to get up. We're supposed to get up early and not have too much sleep, too many hours of sleep, because it drugs the mind. Then we get up and we do our energization, we do our meditation, and you get this laundry list like this. that you're supposed to work through at the end of the day. And if you don't work your way all the way through it, you get to go join those monks and nuns down there who are, who are blaming themselves for not doing enough. Master said part of the reason he gave so much is that different people are attracted to different things. He said, if you do 1/100th of what I suggest, you'll get there. So part of the difficulty that we have on the spiritual path is beating ourselves up that we haven't done enough, and therefore creating the condition that keeps us distant from God, because we say we haven't done enough, and until we do enough, God won't come to us. So therefore, God says, well, all right, seems like a strange thought to me, but that's what he wants. I guess that's what I'll go along with. So think of God as familiar. But what I wanted to talk about primarily this morning is, you know, we get this kind of laundry list and so many things, and for me at least, it helps to organize and simplify things and look at where I can apply my energy that has, at least for me, the maximum benefit. And so I was meditating on the class on Monday, actually, and the thought came in that Swamiji has given us a really beautiful, simplified idea of what we need to work on and work with in Education for Life. He calls it the tools of maturity. And Education for Life, of course, has a dual meaning. One is we think of the children that we're educating in order to be successful for life. But also, education is a lifelong process. And for us, the tools of maturity never end. It's not like somehow we get them in grade school, like everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten. Well, it isn't. Maybe the beginning of that was, but we have to work with these tools, because these are the tools of maturity, not only how to work in the world, but how to find God. And the tools of maturity in that book, Education for Life, Swami says that we work on these primarily in a sequential manner. So from the age of 0 to 6, we're finding out how to work with the physical body. From 6 to 12, we're learning how to work with our feelings and emotions. From 12 to 18, we're learning how to work the teen years, how to work with our will. And finally, from 18 to 24, we're learning how to work with our intellect. So physical, where am I? Physical, emotional, will, and intellect. For the yogi, there's a fifth tool of maturity, and that's intuition. And we have to work with that all the way along, because the other four basically are going to show us how to work successfully in life. But as Devi was saying, the soul comes into this life with a certain sense of regret that this isn't our real home. And so it's intuition that we have to find how to use that tool to help us get out of the repetitive cycle of life and death, life and death, life and death. But I want to talk about those four, and the five actually, a little bit, because for us, that's where the challenge is. These are the tools that we have in order to overcome the delusion of separation. And so we start with the physical body. And, you know, obviously from 0 to 6, a child is learning how to use his physical body. You know, we have now a brand new grandson who can't feed himself, can't do anything for himself, because he hasn't yet begun to learn how to use the physical body. We also have a toddler granddaughter who is like 18 months old, and she's now learning how to walk and how to destroy a house and, you know, all the things that little toddlers learn. And so that process of learning how to use the body is important. But what about us? We've gone through that stage of learning how to walk and how to eat and how to manipulate things with our body and our physical energy. But we still have a great, great deal to learn on the physical level. One is not to take the body too seriously. Think of the culture around us is not helpful in teaching us how to achieve liberation. The culture around us emphasizes over and over and over again the importance of the body. You go to a movie and the hero has a bicep the size of a tree trunk, and you think, well, that's really a good idea to get. think I'll spend a few lifetimes in the gym getting one of those. And the heroine has this gorgeous body, and everybody is not only jealous, but or envious, I should say, but basically slightly ashamed of the body that they have. And so this whole mindset comes in that the way to happiness is to concentrate on looks and the body and outside, and especially what other people think of it. And we can talk about milling around or falling backwards, getting into that loop where we think that appearance is what's important and what is going to lead to our happiness. We can mill around for, I don't know, a few 100,000 lifetimes with that delusion, and we still have it to some extent. So what does Master say? He never talks much about the appearance of the body. He talks about having a healthy body because health can help us. He talks about exercise. But mostly, if you look at his teachings, he talks about how to use consciousness and energy to create the conditions of the body that are helpful. So basically, proper eaterianism, a little bit of exercise, and energization. Use those tools for the body. But for each of us, we're going to have to look at our relationship with our physical body. And as Davy said, kind of see for your own self where your hang-ups are around that, where you think too much about that, or conversely, where you have habits that are deleterious for the body and that need to be changed a little bit. But basically get the body in a healthy state and then forget about it. Don't dwell too much on the body. And so if we can do that, we're going to be in tune with the flow of energy from the masters that are trying to help us get out of this delusion. The next is the feeling nature. Feeling has to do with chitta, which resides in the area of the heart, the anahat chakra. And basically, what it has to do is with the reactive process. And that is a huge, huge area for people. So we have to learn to work with our reactive process. And we have to learn to get our reactions flowing in harmony with that which will produce freedom for us. Because remember, this whole class series, Inner Renewal Week, is about how to achieve freedom. We'll talk about especially tomorrow in the final exam when we leave this body, to leave the body so we're completely finished with everything that we need to do and we identify with our spiritual, our soul nature, and no longer with the delusive nature of Maya. So unless we can learn to work harmoniously with our reactive process, that reactive process is going to keep us caught all the time. Now, it's not just emotion. It's, excuse me, on a much deeper level than that, the reactive process starts with the very first breath that we take in this lifetime. Because the real reactive process is not just feelings, it's the movement of energy up and down in the two channels outside the spine, the ida and the pingala. And as that energy moves up and down, that's what holds us into the physical body. I mentioned yesterday that when we leave and we're going to reincarnate again, we have not controlled the movement of energy in those two channels. And because we haven't, those channels come up to the medulla and we exit through the medulla. And so if we want to get out of this life, we have to learn to control that reactive process on deeper and deeper and deeper levels. Now, it is partly emotionally. It's partly with our feeling nature, because that reactive process that we have has to do with that enormous pattern from the past of our likes and our dislikes. And basically, your reaction to everything comes down to, that doesn't fit my pattern, I don't like it. Or, yeah, that works pretty well with my pattern and I like it. So that sense of, see how it keeps us locked into the form that we already have and into delusion and into Maya. And so part of the tool of maturity in working with that reactive process is to learn not to be so reactive to things in the world. And so we can work on it on multiple, multiple levels. One is to try not to react to what people say. And if you read Master's teachings and Swami's teachings and, Living Wisely, Living Well is a scripture. It's a scripture about how to live in this world. I'll bet if you looked at that and you pulled out kind of what's underneath it, I wouldn't be surprised if a quarter of the sayings in there relate somehow to getting control over your reactive process. And so if you go through day by day and you read that and you actually work, I mean, it's one thing to read it and then put it down or have it on your iPhone app and it kind of clicks on automatically and then you dismiss it. But actually work on what he says for each day. Those practices, even if you aren't successful, the attempt to do those practices gets us in control of the reactive process. And if you're attempting to do that, what kicks in? The other three quarters of the equation, Guru and God, kick in to try to help you with that. Now, the ultimate control of the reactive process is, as we know, Kriya Yoga. That's why Master gives us that, why he says that it is the ancient and most central of all techniques, of all practices of yoga, because controlling that reactive process is yoga. Patanjali defines yoga as yoga chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the neutralization of chitta. It's the neutralization of that reactive process. As soon as we are able to control that, we drop the delusion of ego and separation, and we go into union with God. So if you think that controlling the feeling nature is only needs to work on from age 6 to 12, maybe you ought to rethink that premise a little bit. But again, don't beat yourself up about it. If you have a kind of a reactive nature, for myself, I'm very, very patient with people But if a wrench doesn't behave itself, I immediately react. Or a faucet is a personal insult if it drips, you know? So, so it's God's way of, those inanimate objects are God's way of telling me, well, you got a little bit of work to do on controlling your reactive process. And so all of us will have little signals about something that we need to work on. And it isn't important that I get upset easily at inanimate objects or not, but it is important that I don't have control over that reactive process. Because if I'm not able to control it, then I'm going to be kept into Maya. The other aspect of the feeling nature, and the reason that it's in the heart area, and the reason that we feel love in the heart area, is that we not only need to know how to kind of neutralize that reactive process, the key to that is what Master said, be even-minded and cheerful all the time. So work on being even-minded and cheerful. But we also need to learn how to take the energy of the heart and allow it to flow in a positive direction. And that means to awaken love and allow that love to flow appropriately and positively. As Sri Yukteswar said, you cannot take the first step on the spiritual path without love. And that, it expresses itself in myriad ways. It isn't just a kind of a saccharine sentiment that we're working on. It expresses itself through devotion. As Devi was saying with Swami, he said, my path has been Guru Seva and Guru Bhakti. Guru Bhakti is love of the Guru. And so that allowing the energy of the heart, remember the channel, out the reactive process in the irda and the pingala, every breath that goes up, every exhalation down, it just goes around and around and around. But as we work on working toward strengthening the positive flow of that, so Guru Bhakti is extremely important. Last year, we suggested as an exercise for the year during this class that we working on keeping the mind in the presence of God. And I suggested that we memorize and keep repeating God, 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 from the depths of slumber as I ascend the spiral staircase of wakefulness. I will whisper, God, God, God. I won't repeat the whole thing, but that kind of daily, constant, as much as possible, use some technique to keep the energy flowing toward God, the mind flowing toward God. Really, that's the only reason that we've incarnated, is to work through the process of having the mind attached to outward things and therefore keeping us in a reincarnational cycle, or have it attached to the spirit and focused on the spirit. But as long as we're in this world, then we also need to, as Sri Yukteswar said, behave. And so we have to take that element of the heart, of the reactive process and of the love nature of the heart, and we have to express it in this world as kindness, as caring, as all of the positive expressions. We were talking with someone yesterday at lunch, and he said something very beautiful. He was talking about a friend who was very dear to him, and one of the things that he said was, when this friend was with you, he was completely with you. He wasn't thinking about something else or kind of looking at his watch. He was there completely present. If we can do that, that's part of the, I don't know, the magic of Swami, is that Well, let me say there is, for the yogi, there is no such thing as multitasking. In fact, for no one is there such a thing as multitasking. There is just quick shifting of attention. That's what multitasking is. But for the yogi, we learn concentration. And so when we're with someone, try to be completely and lovingly and kindly with that person. And then when that time ends, go on to the next task that you have. But to take the reactive, the emotional nature, the feeling nature, and work on it in a positive direction. Most importantly, to work on your love for God and Guru, because that is what will take you there. Remember, we're talking about how to exit through the spiritual eye. The spiritual eye is obviously what we see, but it also is the seat of the Guru. It's the seat of Krishna. That's where he resides. Those who think of me come to me. And so think more and more. Try to work. If there is one thing that we can do that will move us along more quickly, it's to work on loving God and Guru more deeply and more continuously. That alone will do it. Then the third thing is the will. Again, if you think of, I don't know, the negative aspect of life, all you have to do is go to a movie. You got the hero with the bulging forearm and the heroine with the skin-tight dress. You've got them mad, negative, and out for revenge. Perfect examples of the proper use of the emotional reactive nature. And you've got them using their will unbreakably to go as fast as they can and as determinedly as they can toward the back of the train. And we sit there and we lap it up. And so naturally, you know, one of the aspects of being on the spiritual path is that we have to disengage a little bit from the role models. In Satya Yuga, we won't have to. In Satya Yuga, we can engage in the role models. But in this age, we can't. I enjoyed someone saying that you can tell the nature of a culture by that which they think of as their heroes. And so you think of America, who we think of as our heroes, and then you think of India, and it's Krishna and Rama and Gandhi and the great saints. But this culture is not going to help you move progressively closer to God. So, you know, we have to deal with it. But that's why Master talked about being a paramhansa. It means the ability to swim in a mixture of the swan is supposed to have the ability to swim in a mixture of milk and water and turn the milk into curds so that he can eat it. We have to swim in this world of very, very mixed vibrations and be able to pick out those that are helpful to us, leave the rest alone, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. Just keeps us milling around if we do. So to pull back and to use our will to move us toward God. How do we do that? Basically, one practice. Try to align your will with the will of God. Master said his highest prayer, there are two high, I love this, he has two highest prayers. Kind of keeps you from getting stuck. His this highest prayer is, I will think, I will, I will act, but guide thou my thought, will, and activity to the right path in everything. And so we have to will. We have to use will, Master, defined as desire plus energy directed toward a goal. Desire, so obviously we desire. Obviously we have energy. That's the nature of the universe. But direct it toward a goal. How do we learn to direct it toward the right goal? Guide thou my will. Guide thou my activity to the right path and everything. So there's a very simple practice for working properly with this, and that's try to stay conscious of asking Master what the right thing to do is in everything you do. That's why we pray at the beginning of the meetings that we have. Of course you can pray and not really pray. You know, you can mouth the words and not really be asking for guidance. But if we're going to make progress, really do spend some time each day. And if you can develop the practice to truly ask Master to guide your will to the right thing and do that several times a day, it sets you up so that you're in alignment with the flow of grace. You know, a ship sails much faster when the wind is behind it and it's got the full sails than when it's bucking the wind and has to tack back and forth. So get Master's will and God's will for you. Get that behind your sails and let them push you along. And it's a tremendously helpful process. Finally, the fourth in the tools is the intellect. And I won't spend much time on that because basically don't believe too much of what the world tells you. Use your intellect to discriminate between what's real and what isn't. These four also contain these four tools of maturity, also contain the four paths of yoga. But here it's jnana yoga to discriminate between what's real and what isn't real. And so keep asking the question, does this move me toward God or does it not? And use the intellect for that. Finally, I want to talk just a little bit about intuition, because it's intuition. All of these four, as I said, are going to help us to work more harmoniously and more successfully in the world of Maya. But ultimately, all that will produce is good karma. And we want to get rid of all karma. So intuition is that which will draw us out of Maya. And intuition is the natural way of knowing of the soul. The other four work with the ego and help refine the ego. And the soul can't come forward until the ego is refined and ready to be left behind. So that those four get us to the point where we're really ready to be out of Maya. But intuition is the tool that will take us out of that. And the only way really to develop intuition is by calming the consciousness and the mind and opening up the flow of God, because intuition is the natural knowing of God. That's why meditation is such an absolutely central practice to us, because in proper meditation, in real meditation, what happens is that we withdraw the energy from the reactive process, that's pranayama, and we begin to center it in the deep spine so that the senses, energy is withdrawn from the senses, and we awaken then, the senses go to sleep, and we begin to awaken into the interior world, and in that interior world is where we're really able to meditate deeply. So the process of meditation, and our path is so clear about it, is that withdrawal of energy, and our techniques help with that, and the focusing of that energy. Why do we look in the forehead and try to see the spiritual eye? As I said yesterday, the spiritual eye is the projection of the Sushumna, is the projection of the interior spine. And so by concentrating on that and trying to see that, our energy goes inside, and the whole world of what of true reality opens up to us. And unless we have that process of meditation, or, you know, not everybody has meditation and the specific tools of it, but every saint has to have deep concentration on the inward reality of the divine. Otherwise, you can't get there. So the concentration of that awakens our intuition, awakens the world of reality that is the real world, whereas the world that we think is real is the world of Maya. But it takes a long, God created Maya. And as Master said, if you think that Maya isn't attractive, then you're not giving God credit for being a good workman. He's made Maya very, very attractive. And we have to put out energy to counteract that attraction and to draw the grace of God and Guru behind us. But really the most important thing of all was what was summed up, as Devi said, what Swami summed up, Guru Seva, help others in the world, be a channel for God, Guru Bhakti, and meditation. If we practice those, then we will have the winds of grace completely behind us, pushing us quickly toward our goal.
Life is a dream, time like a stream, carries our burdens away. Never despair, joy's everywhere. Love can befriend you today. Free from all care, draw